If you've ever had an idea for a new product or technology, or wondered, how did they think of that? Listen up. If you've ever wondered how inventive people come up with really cool new ideas and make them a reality, listen up. If you think you don't have time to be creative or to bring your ideas to fruition, listen up, because today's guest is the most prolific female inventor in IBM history. And she has two sets of twins, four kids. Oh my God. So I bet you use at least one of her patents or one of her inventions every day. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we bring you insights and tips from remarkably innovative women, particularly about corporate responsibility, energy, and sustainability related issues. I'm Joan Michelson. We talk about innovation, leadership, technologies, and careers, always bringing a new perspective. Find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, on our website, greenconnectionsradio.com, and through my forums blog as well. And please pass it on to your friends. If you want to gain insight from more women like me and our accomplished guests, or if you're struggling with your career in this ridiculous time we're living in, please reach out to me, join one of our mastermind groups. We will help you with contacts, resources, strategies, and tips to save you time and money. And it's a stressful time, so be kind to yourself and take care. I'd like you to meet Lisa Cicat-DeLuca, a director of emerging solutions in AI and a distinguished engineer at IBM. I think she has a way long title that I'm not even going to try to wade through, but maybe she'll tell us. Basically, she's innovating IBM's digital technologies, but we're going to find out exactly how she's doing this. Here's the insane part. Lisa holds 500 patents that have been issued and has another 200 or so patents pending. Oh my God. They even include patents related to electric vehicle charging and tracking the amount of time you spend on your mobile phone. I don't know if I want to know that information. But anyway, she's a proud member of the IBM Women Inventors community and, as I said, the most prolific female inventor in IBM history. With four children, I don't know. We'll be here all day if I read all her credentials, so you'll just read about it in the show notes, and we're going to go on. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, Lisa. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So I'm going to jump right in. How do you come up with your ideas? Take us a little bit into your thinking process.
You know, all great ideas stem from a really good problem, right? There's problems all around us. You hear people complaining all the time, but the really good problems are the ones that you're hearing consistently, especially when it's related or coming from a client need. And hearing those problems and starting to think, how can I solve this in a way that nobody else has thought of before? Or maybe they've thought of it a little bit, but we can take it a step further. That's where the great ideas come from.
So is it like you're wrestling with a client problem and you come up with another way to do it? Or is it like the proverbial woman who can't find the kind of baby food that she wants for her kids, so she decides to try to make it in her kitchen and all of her friends ask for it because they like it, you know? Or, I mean, because we all
definitely both. Yeah, a little bit of both. I hear you, right? I definitely have a lot of inventions that are just my own personal needs as a mom, as a human being, as a consumer that's playing with products, and then also from my day job. Right. So you gave me a great introduction, but I oversee our weather business, which includes aviation. So there's a lot of problems that are coming up from general business users and what we're doing. So it's been really fun to have a little bit of both.
Wow. Weather, climate. Oh, my God. There's so much we need. So I bet are you working with NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration of the U.S. government?
I am sure our weather business is somewhere.
They have the National Weather Service. Yep. And the National Weather Service sends their data to the weather humans we see on TV and get mad at when they're wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And to your point about climate change, it's really hard nowadays to predict the weather. And that's one of the things that we're facing is, you know, you've seen so many times during the news just this year, how many hurricanes they're coming through. And it's definitely been a fun challenge to think through how we can position our solutions and our technology to do better prediction.
You know, it's interesting. Before we move on, there's two interviews I did you might want to listen to a lot. I mean, I've interviewed 300 people, and I think they're all cool. They're all inventor type, creative inventors like you. But two of them are women who just won the MacArthur Genius Awards for coming up with cool new ways to measure climate impact. One was a different way to measure sea level rise, and the other was a scientific way to help leverage culture to change people's behavior so they take better care of their land for climate mitigation, but it's getting to the human behavior part and leveraging culture to do it. She's in Micronesia. She's an American. She's on assignment in Micronesia. It's really great. Andrea Dutton and Stacy Jupiter.
Okay. I'll check it out.
They're really cool. If you just put MacArthur Genius in my search bar, you'll find it. So you're an inventor. To me, you're an innovator, right? So how do you define innovation? You know, there's disruptive, there's incremental. Do you have a definition? And what do you work from?
Yeah, so for me, I get most excited about the idea of contributing to a larger society, right? And so all of our ideas, when one person comes up with a great idea, it allows all of us as humans to build off of it and come up with the next great thing. So for me, it doesn't matter how small it is, right? It doesn't all have to be life-changing ideas. Small little things can eventually lead to those bigger ideas.
That's always the case, isn't it? And if you pull on a small idea, it unravels a bigger problem too, right?
Exactly.
I've written about outliers and hire the outliers for having difference of opinions and places. So you've talked about in something I saw in my research on you, how important diverse teams are. And of course, yes. You know, we focus on women because we need more women at the table. And I think women are natural innovators because we've had to find another way most of the time. So how do you integrate outliers into your methodology? Because you have to have people who are going to go, what if we...
Yeah. So I think that since everyone is so different, you've got to really play to that knowledge going into it and get people who, you know, might be a little more shy. They're not speaking up in the meetings enough. So let's give them opportunities through social media or messaging, things like Slack, to be able to share their ideas without having to speak out in large groups. And then you've got the people that tend to talk too much. So it's like taking them aside and letting them kind of harness their ideas in a way that other people can contribute. There's great tools out there for design thinking. We use one called Mural, and it's basically a virtual way of dragging sticky notes around. So we say, all right, everyone, throw your ideas down on how you'd solve this problem. And all of a sudden you see all these people and stickies moving around. So it's really fun to have that visual of how multiple people can contribute in one way.
Oh, that's cool. Is Mural an IBM product?
No, anyone can have access to it. Yeah, it's external.
So in one of your interviews, you talked about how you have your team, when they want to pitch ideas, do you have every Monday at 3:00, everybody pitches ideas, or how do you structure that?
I would love that. Yeah. So I am a manager. I am a manager, and I do push my employees to submit a patent idea at least once a quarter. And some people get really scared. They're like, that's too scary. I don't know if I can do it. I'm not ready. And then I help them. I sit down with them. I mentor them through the process. But I do also run what we call an invention development team. And that is every Friday. And so people from around the company come and present their idea. They've got 15-minute slots. So for about 5 minutes, they're pitching their idea. And then a bunch of experts on whatever the topic is, mine happens to be around IoT, we throw prior art at them, right? So we say, this exists. We see this part existing. And then they respond to it. And then by the end of that 15-minute slot, we actually vote on it, on whether or not we think it should pursue as a patent. So pretty fun, fast paced.
I was going to say speed patenting.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's almost like Shark Tank, but on speed. That's a great segue too. So what's the criteria for moving an idea forward? I mean, are you looking for something that only applies to a current client problem or current internal problem? I mean, what's your criteria for moving something forward?
So there's so many great ideas that could be patentable, but from an IBM lens, we're thinking about what can we do to improve technology, improve open source around whatever the technology happens to be, or the future of where it's gonna go? It might not be there today, but what will it look like? If it's related to a client or an actual offering that we have in place, then the chances of it being filed are higher because, you know, we wanna have that differentiation from our offerings. But it really depends, and there's multiple stages of how it goes through the process of figuring out if it's gonna be a full-on patent. So from our IBM side, we've got our IDTs, and then we do a formal search, see what exists in the art, and then we write it up. But there's all sorts of different stages that it's not just one person that's overseeing the idea.
So are you only looking for ideas that are patentable? Because you can have a great idea that becomes something you can build a business around or a service around, but that isn't necessarily patentable.
I am so glad you brought that up. Within IBM, I was overseeing this solution called the Agile Accelerator, and we opened it up to the whole company to submit patent ideas through the regular patent processes around what they thought a new business idea could be. And those ideas that got a search rating, meaning we were going to look into filing a patent on them, moved on to a next round of a business competition. Because you're right, there are some really great ideas that might not be patentable, but that process of figuring out if an idea is patentable is very similar to vetting a new idea. It's just going to see what exists out there. Who are the competitors? How are you different? So if it is patentable, there's a greater chance of it being a unique business idea.
That's a good point. But for example, in a lot of investors, I do a lot with the entrepreneurial community, and even for an SBIR, I mean, an SBIR, they want you to have something patentable, but it doesn't have to be patentable. I mean, they want it to be, and by definition, something high risk is going to be, right? I mean, a lot of things we have now are just an amalgamation of other stuff that we just put to, you know, we put Humpty Dumpty together a little bit differently, right?
For sure. But I do think that if you're not used to inventing, you might think that what you've come up with or your business idea is not patentable because you're so close to it. It's like, this is obvious. Yeah. But throw it by someone like myself and there's probably 20 ideas there. So don't give up on what might be patentable, even if you don't think that that's the main part of your business.
Oh, I love that. You know, it's interesting. Don't give up just because you don't think it's patentable, right? Because, for example, I don't know if most people don't know this, but PayPal actually started as an entirely different business. And they just invented the PayPal part of it, the payment part of it, to facilitate payment. The rest of the business went, you know, collapsed. But the payment part was really successful. So they pulled that out and made that a business.
That's awesome.
So you never know, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to ask you that's really unique to your situation is I noticed all of your patents are in the name of you, right? Or other people with you. I didn't look at all 500 or 750 of your patents. But the ones that I looked at, I didn't see IBM listed, which is interesting to me because we talk a lot about side hustles for women who want to do something creative on the side, but you have to be really careful because your employer might own your side hustle or might own the patent that comes out of it, right? Take us into that process a little bit because they're under your name. They're not under IBM, but you're a full-time employee there.
Yeah, you got it. So I am the inventor, regardless of having IBM's name on it. IBM's the assignee. So if you look closely, it'll say this is assigned to IBM. Because you're right, IBM owns the rights to my inventions while I'm working at IBM. So it's really, that's where you'd see that, the company that's owning it. It's based on the assignee. But yeah, you do have to be careful if you do have a side hustle. Within IBM, we have a process of requesting what's called a disclaimer of title, where you can say, I've got this cool idea. I did it before. I had one related to putting wheels on a container for my kids to drive around in the house. So completely unrelated to IBM business. So I could go and ask for permission to file it and pursue it outside of IBM.
And not without having the assigned to part?
Exactly.
So does that mean that when you leave IBM, you take those patents with you?
No matter what, they can't take my name off them, right? I'm an inventor on all 500 for sure. But yes, I won't. I assign the rights to IBM. So IBM's going to pursue all the legal side of the patents and prosecution and revenue associated. But I do get a bonus, right? So we get incentives to participate in patenting at IBM.
Okay. So if you invent something and you take it after you leave IBM, you still have to share the revenue with IBM.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to take it outside of IBM if it's assigned to IBM. I could ask them and maybe negotiate something, but typically, no, it's IBM's.
Did you have to negotiate that when you took your job, or was that just all the normal part of their employee contract?
Yep, normal part of employee. Okay, I've been with IBM my entire career, so yeah.
Well, that's instructive. I interviewed a young lady, I think it was actually her and her sister. They're engineers at BMW. But they came up with a completely different thing that was like a platform for women's clothing or something. I don't remember. Something like that. And they went to their HR people or their boss and said, this has obviously nothing to do with cars, right? So they just, you know, get to do it as a side hustle. I want to talk about this managing diversity a little bit and kind of loops in with negotiating. Conflict is an inevitable part of innovation and driving innovation. And it's really, it's not really inevitable. I think it's necessary. I'm not a, you know, let's all get together and sing Kumbaya and come up with the next great invention, because I think it's that friction of, no, what if we do it this way? No, you know, that kind of, that is where the better idea comes from, right? How do you manage conflict on your teams?
Yeah, so we follow the Agile best practices. So we're doing sprints and stand-ups, and we're talking through ideas, we're creating user stories, listening to clients and putting it in kind of a one-liner on how it benefits the end user. But after, at the end of the day, we do a retrospect and we say what worked well and what didn't work well. And it's open to anyone. In fact, yesterday my team had one and they said, Lisa, you can't join because we want people to feel comfortable to come up with their reasons why things weren't working and not have the boss in the room, which I respected, right? So they were able to get through what the ideas worked and what didn't work and what they could do better moving forward.
And then did they give you the feedback later?
Yeah, so I got to hear.
They just didn't want you to know who said what, huh?
Maybe, the anonymous side of it, yeah.
Except you know that it's all coming from them.
Exactly.
That's right. Can you define Agile for us?
Yeah, so Agile is a process. It's a best practices for mostly software development, but you can use it for anything. And it's a way of just really prioritizing what you want to deliver in a way that keeps you organized and keeps you on track. So we should all be agile in our day-to-day lives.
So it's basically prioritizing?
Exactly. Yep. So you have a backlog of all the features you'd ever want to create for whatever it is, or everything you want to do. If you think about it as an individual in your career, write down everything you want to do. And then you say in 2 week sprints, you're going to get things accomplished. So you move things from your backlog to what you're doing right now. And then as you're checking them all off, you say, okay, why didn't I get something done? Why do I need more time on certain areas? And it's just a good way of tracking and giving yourself goals to move towards.
It's like project management to stay on task, right?
Exactly.
How do you create a safe space for people to come up with the proverbial crazy idea?
So as a lead of an IDT where I'm hearing a lot of crazy ideas come across the board.
I mean,
board,
that's your job, right?
Yeah, that's my job. So I think, you know, you got to start with what people did well and not destroy the idea or the confidence of the individual while destroying the idea. Because I definitely agree with transparency and getting right to the point of why something didn't make it through so they can ultimately learn from it and get better for future ideas. But it's a balance of saying, this is how you can tweak your idea to eventually get that goal of a search and eventually a file for your patent. And everyone's a little different. There's some best practices with inventing and gotchas that new inventors tend to forget or overlook. And it's just helping to teach them and coach them through the process.
So your example of having people give feedback of what didn't work and not wanting you in the room begs the question, though, how do you build the trust so that they feel comfortable saying, at least I don't agree?
Yeah, I hope my team feels comfortable to come and tell me things. I do a lot of one-on-ones. I think that's a great way to really hear what people have to think, and they don't have to worry about what their peers think about them coming forward and asking a question that might not, you know, be on target. So having the one-on-ones, making it organized so that my directs have a spreadsheet that they show me, what are areas that we can work on together? Let's discuss something. What are some blockers that I can help overcome? Then what did you work on? What do you plan to work on? And anything else you want to talk about? So it keeps it all organized, gets their thoughts down on paper, and we can talk through anything that they're facing.
How often do you do that?
Once a week.
Wow, once a week. Mm-hmm. Boy, I wish I had that when I was in corporate America. That's amazing. One of the things I heard you talk about was when you do have your team pitch ideas, you ask them to start with a story. Talk about that. You talked in one of your interviews about how your inventive nature started with making up stories when you were a kid. So talk about why you have people start their pitches with telling a story.
I think it was best summarized recently by a talk I heard that said, your message is in your mess. So all the struggles that you're going through, all the problems that you're facing, it makes other people easy to relate to you and to relate to your solution. So positioning it that way, they're more likely to remember what you have to say, and they are more likely to get on board with whatever your idea happens to be.
Because chances are they have the same mess that they want to clean up.
Exactly.
It makes you relatable. It makes it relatable, right? Mm-hmm. What if you're addressing a problem, like if you're a woman addressing a problem that a woman has, but you're pitching to men and they don't have that problem?
Definitely got to target to your audience so you can kind of tweak your mess, your message, whatever that story happens to be, depending on the audience you're pitching to.
I'll tell you a quick funny story. When I was first doing Green Connections Media, I was in an entrepreneurship program in New York and sustainable entrepreneurs. And we had a pitch, you know, event, right? And when I said that I was going to be focused on interviewing women and highlighting women innovators, one of the interesting potential investors said, well, why don't you have women in the title? And I looked at him and I said, New York Times doesn't have men in the title. Washington Post doesn't have men in the title. The Wall Street Journal doesn't have men in the title. Whole place cracked up.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I've noticed at a lot of conferences where there are breakout sessions that are like a women's panel or, you know, a women's networking event. And I feel you, I think it discourages men from being in the room. And that's what we need, is inclusive. We need the men to hear the struggles that we're going through just as much as we need women to have a shoulder to cry on, right? So I agree, removing that qualifier is a good idea.
Well, you know, it's interesting because on the other hand, when I was at American Express, I did a lot of programs on women and wealth and stuff. And even to this day, I was just interviewing somebody who talked about having to do focus groups with just girls and just boys, or just women and just men, that women don't say the same thing when they're in a group. Even uber wealthy women didn't want to talk about money in front of men. I'm like, you talk about money in front of men every day. You know, it's weird. It's sometimes it's on us, right? So before I ask you a couple of quick questions for career advice, two other things. One is the proverbial, I have to ask you about data privacy, especially with this mobile app tracking technology that I saw that you have. So something like that, I mean, it's collecting potentially sensitive data. What's your take on the whole data privacy issue?
You know, I just watched The Social Dilemma.
I'm afraid to watch it.
Everyone needs to watch it. And I didn't realize how addicted I really was to my phone and how much it was controlling me and my behaviors, and you don't realize it, but I looked it up and I had over 600 notifications in a single day. And every time my phone buzzes, as humans, we grab it and we have to look at it to see what it is. And then ultimately you end up wasting so much of your life doing that. So I immediately turned off all notifications except for like text messaging. And it's been amazing how quiet it's been. And I think that's ultimately what privacy is all about, is the ability for people to opt in and opt out. So being able to say, this is valuable to me, I want more of it. And then giving them more reasons to realize that they're being overwhelmed, right? Our phones just telling you have this much time you spent on the device or this many notifications. But yeah. It's hard.
Reminds me of, I just did a story on, in this crisis, a lot of people are complaining about being alone a lot. And I reframed it and said, in solitude, you get a better sense of self-awareness and you get a better sense of how you use your time. And so it's that kind of a thing, right? It's attention units, and it's those dings are taking you to their agenda away from your agenda. Mm-hmm. But data privacy is all the data that gets collected in these gizmos, right? So what's your take on managing? Do you think that it's just up to people to say, no, I don't want that? I mean, but what is the responsibility of the tech companies?
It's totally on the shoulders of the tech companies too, right? To make sure that they're collecting information in that matters, that's specific to whatever the outcome of their business is. It's also something that they're upfront and open to their end users of why they're collecting the data and what they're using it for, and be clear that they're not selling it, they're not using it in any way that the end user would be uncomfortable with. A lot more tech companies need to take that responsibility and change the way they're operating their businesses.
have really data ethics policies, right? Yeah. So I'm sorry. I really thought I was busy and that I managed time really well. How the bleep do you do that? I mean, seriously. No, I mean, really seriously. Are you one of these people who has like every minute scheduled? Are you one of these people that has, you know, blocks of every Monday at 3, I'm doing this? I mean, really, how do you manage time?
I think it goes back to the agile practices that I mentioned and having a retrospect with yourself, right? So at the end of every week, say, did I accomplish what I wanted to accomplish? Because it's really easy for the day to just get away from you and for everyone's, you know, pulling and pulling. I want this, I want this, I want this. But ultimately, you've got to be in control of what you are prioritizing and what you're delivering. There's a great book called The One Thing that my manager recommended. And it's all about just focusing on one thing, not a bunch of stuff going on, that one thing. And once you get that one thing done, then you move on to the next thing. And that way you guarantee that that one thing is going to be done. So it's not like I have more time than anyone else. It's just that I prioritize the things that are most important to me and make sure to also prioritize my family, right? So it'd be really easy to work all the time, but I want to balance. I want to be able to spend time with my kids. I want them to know me. So right now I'm in Montana. I am working East Coast hours. At 3 o'clock, I go get my kids and I spend the afternoon with them. It's really up to individuals on how they want to prioritize their time.
I was going to say, if you're in Baltimore still, like, we could get together because I'm in Virginia. We could meet in the middle. You know, it's interesting because I do this with my coaching clients. I make them keep a time log for a week and I make them track everything, you know, taking a shower, taking a walk, making dinner. A lot of times people only write down certain things, right? Uh-huh. It was interesting. I mean, some of my clients have said, oh, I didn't realize how much time I'm spending doing this, or I didn't realize how much time I'm not spending doing that, or whatever. You know, it's like, well, what do you want to move around? You know, and I think it's self-awareness, right? It increases self-awareness. And then you can choose. And it's a way of taking personal responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. I know. I never wear makeup or anything. I'm like, I don't have time for that. It would take too long to get pretty every day. So I do agree there's some trade-offs and you just need to figure out what makes you happy.
Yeah, I'm really lucky. I have pretty good hair and so I don't have to do it all that often. I mean, if I was one of these people who had to do all this crap every day, I'd be like, forget about it. I'm not going to do it. No, I can't. I don't have the patience to do that, you know, like all the time. And I'm an exercise freak. So people go, how do you have time to exercise? I go, I make it a priority, right? It's like, I'm not okay if I don't exercise.
There's a great quote I love. It says, it's discipline is giving up what you want now for what you want more. And I think that's about anything. It's like, yes, I could go watch TV. I could go, you know, eat a giant candy bar. But it's like, what do you want in the long run? And that's all about being that self-constraining.
Yeah. And frankly, there are things on TV that I watch. Well, first of all, I'm a journalist, so I watch certain things, but I like to watch The Crown and, you know, things like that. But I just record it. I mean, The Crown you can tap into anytime, but I just record things I want. And then I can watch it on my time.
Exactly.
When I'm ready, not on their agenda. So before we go, I just want to ask you a couple of quick career things. One is, how did you get your job at IBM in the first place, if you don't mind talking about it?
So I went to Carnegie Mellon University, which is one of the best computer science schools in the nation. So right there, I had a good reputation behind me and lots of opportunities for internships and ultimately landed the job. But I think if I had to tell a young person how to get a job at a big tech company, it's definitely get experience however you can, whether that's an internship or it's teaching yourself, right? Go out, look online, do some YouTube tutorials. There's a lot of free stuff out there and get the experience so that your resume has the right stuff to match the job description.
Cool. By the way, one of my sisters went to Carnegie Mellon. Nice. And my aunt was a civil rights leader in Pittsburgh for decades. So I have interesting connections to Pittsburgh. So we do like to give career advice, but we like to give career advice to mid-career women. What advice would you give to a woman who has, you know, a little bit less than your experience-ish, you know, come give or take, who wants to make a difference, wants to make money, wants to use her education and her experience, but she really does want to make a difference, you know, in this world. So what advice would you give her?
I think it's just to follow your passions, because you can turn the passions that you're doing, if you're spending enough time at it, into your day job. And it's funny, all the moves I've made within IBM, I wanted to learn mobile development. So I taught myself outside of work. And then I had the skills that got me into the group within IBM. Same with Internet of Things technology. It was something I was interested in. Weather has always been something that's interesting to me, because I agree, it's nice to work on a solution that you know is affecting everybody and can have a positive impact on the world. So it's find whatever that is for you and then get involved with it. And then you'll find how to get it to your day job.
Oh, that's a great idea. I love that. I love what you said. You can turn your passions into your day job. And that's, you know, sometimes it's a side hustle. And sometimes you can try it as a side hustle and discover, hey, I don't really want to do this. Cool. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to see how it turns out. And hopefully some of the listeners will reach out and introduce themselves. We can all expand our networks.
Absolutely. Are you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
Lisa Seacat, and that's Seacat. Yep, on Twitter, on LinkedIn.
Cool.
I deleted my Facebook account.
Okay, good for you. Yeah. I will reach out on both. There you go. So thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us. I really appreciate it on Green Connections Radio. So are you someone who loves to come up with cool ideas? Tweet it to us at John Michelson and include at Lisa Seacat, right? Or post it on our Facebook page. We are on Facebook, and like the page while you're there. We also have a Facebook group. If you want to join that, let us know. Find us on greenconnectionsradio.com or on any podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, take your pick, wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, if you want support for your career, please reach out to us. We can help. It's a stressful time. So be kind to yourself and take care. And you can always channel your frustration into creating something new, right? Like Lisa did. But anyway, send it to us on Twitter or LinkedIn. And please tell me you're a listener, because I get a lot of messages, and that way I won't skip over your message. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Lisa. Take care of yourselves and see you next time. I'm John Michelson.